And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Summer's over, fall's coming, so it's time to drag out the dog sleds and start polishing up the runners, for the big race is on. And all the nation's focused on Alaska as the new mush queen of politics, Governor Sarah Palin, sharpens the teeth of her new attack dogs as she goes after her opponents. The odds makers have it pegged as a dead heat. There's an even chance the McCain-Palin team could come in first. If they do win and take control of the reins of power, what kind of world might we see? We take an in-depth look at Sarah Palin's view of the world and the Earth and all the living creatures when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Less than 60 days left for Americans to determine their future. A future so complex that perhaps for the first time in our history, who takes over as president and how and what they do with this nation could set us on a course to recovery or collapse. Some will say such talk is just more politics as usual, using scare tactics to sway the electorate. But some of us, myself included, who look carefully at our Earth and speak to the future of living systems, which includes our national identity, have no choice but to speak our truth. And that truth is that we are at a crucial time in the history of life on Earth. We have populated the wild places and take from what's left everything of value. And as the low-hanging fruit is gone and our needs exceed our reach, the quest for resources returns to the old wild places, now filled with all of us. That's why we are now being pummeled with placards and slogans that say, "Drill, drill, drill," a shrill and desperate scream of the new survivalists demanding energy independence, damn the consequences. And "drill, drill, drill" is the battle cry of the McCain-Palin ticket, and it's working. But there is a much deeper message unveiled if you drill, drill, drill into the core of the McMantra. All Americans need to understand that it should also be interpreted as take, take, take. And now with McCain's hot new backup player acting as head cheerleader, the drilling and taking is now bundled into some God-driven campaign of rapture for the righteous, or at least the right wing. Today we take a look at what God is apparently telling Sarah Palin to do as we fly over the lands of her dominion, the state of Alaska, and survey who she is and how she treats God's creation. And in the process, unveil the vision of America delivered. Today's show is in two parts. Listen carefully. This last week, the nation's election has been determined. The players are settled. It certainly is a change from what many people perhaps had expected to happen in this election. There's a lot of new players, a whole different perspective. It's very likely a very difficult election to call. One of the most amazing developments this last week was the nomination and approval of Governor Sarah Palin as McCain's vice presidential running candidate. She's a governor of Alaska, and she's a very unique, powerful figure. I'm going to spend today's show trying to find out a lot more about Sarah Palin from someone who definitely has a background in Alaska, knows Sarah Palin and her history. And so I want to invite to the Wild Side News Kate Troll, who is the executive director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance. Kate, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
First of all, Kate, give us just a sense of what the Alaska Conservation Alliance is about and who participates.
The Conservation Alliance here in Alaska is comprised of about 40 state-based conservation groups. We figure we have a combined membership of about 38,000 Alaskans. And I'm also the executive director of the Alaska Conservation Voters, which is a conservation voter league associated with the National League of Conservation Voters. And on the voter side, that's where we engage in lobbying and we participate participate in various campaigns. Mm-hmm. And for purposes of this interview, I'm wearing my Alaska Conservation Voters hat.
Each person has their own reasons for doing what they do. What brings you to this moment in your life and this cause and dedication?
I've lived up here in Alaska for more than 30 years and came up here after graduating with a degree in natural resource management, and have been involved in resource issues in the state, from representing the fishing industry to serving as a coastal policy analyst in the governor's office to now heading up conservation. But I've been very engaged, you know, previously with the fishing industry, and it's Alaska is a state where if you love the outdoors, there's no better place to be, and it's very much resource-driven, and if you're engaged in resource issues, there's probably no more exciting place to be in the United States than Alaska.
That, of course, relates directly to Sarah Palin, because as governor, she's been extremely active in promoting resource and wildlife issues. My effort is to find out more about Governor Palin. Just generally speaking, I mean, all politicians are subject to all sorts of perspectives, and she certainly is no exception. From your perspective, what is the current state of feeling towards Governor Palin from people like yourself and others?
From people like myself, you know, we have to look at her in the context of who she followed. She followed Governor Murkowski, who was very unpopular, arrogant, and who systematically tried to dismantle some of Alaska's stronger environmental protections. So in the context of who she followed, we feel like, okay, this is someone who at least gives us access, and we're beginning to make some progress. But, you know, in the context of comparing her to other governors, including other Republican governors, I'd say her environmental record is very weak. And then when you jump to the next context of viewing her as a vice presidential candidate and you understand where she's coming from on energy and climate change issues, and it gets to be pretty scary when at that level. So, you know, the context has changed rapidly. So we're evolving from one of addressing her as much better than her predecessor, but, you know, in terms of on the national scale, her record does not really bode well for the nation.
Well, she certainly has had a very quick climb to her current place as vice presidential running mate with John McCain. It's been very fast. She was a mayor of a small town, Wasilla, in Alaska. But in 2006, she was chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Why her, and what can you share about that?
You have to realize she's one of those star-crossed politicians who was in the right place at the right time. And she ran for lieutenant governor. She made a good showing. And oftentimes what the Republican Party will do is sort of reward those promising young, new Republican faces with nice positions. And the Oil and Gas Commission tends to be one of those. It's considered sort of a plum job. It's not hugely responsible in terms of all the power it has. It sounds a lot more powerful than it really is.
It's great on a resume.
It looks great on the resume, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When she was there, she realized that a lot of the other Republicans that had been given these types of appointments were doing Republican business while being paid on the job to do the business of the Oil and Gas Commission. Mm-hmm. And to her credit, she challenged that. And then that got the attention of the more moderate Republicans. And things started catapulting from there.
Well, certainly that is one of the stories that she... The claim is that she's a maverick, that she stands up to inappropriate actions and the oil companies, et cetera. To what degree is that accurate?
To some degree, it is accurate in that she has sort of taken on the Republican good old boys. At the same time, you know, she still sort of follows some of the same old politics, too. So it's sort of like she takes on the oil industry when it comes to taxes, but then doesn't really take them on when it comes to addressing, you know, a new energy policy for Alaska and supports accelerated offshore oil and gas leasing, those types of things. So you have to look at her as, you know, in the context of standing up to make sure Alaskans get their fair share of our oil wealth, she's been very good. And to stand up to make sure that the public's business is done out in the open, she's been good there.
You know, that is a positive.
Right.
Some of the things that, of course, I'm hearing, I recently heard one of the debates between the gubernatorial candidates for the 2006 election in Alaska, and she's an interesting player. I mean, I have to admit, she's articulate. Actually, she comes to this with a lot of real information. She lays out cases somewhat well. What came across to me was, and this is just my takeaway from this, is that number one, she really does love to hunt. And that's very important to her end as well. She relies on that history, her personal history in that, to support, for example, indigenous people's rights to carry on their lifestyles. She also seems to be someone who is very much resource driven, that she really sees these resources as something that should be utilized to the fullest extent. Help us understand your take, at least, on kind of those angles.
Well, I think, you know, when you live in a state like Alaska, hunting is a way of life for many of us. My husband's a hunter, my son, my daughter, they all hunt. I'm not a hunter, but I certainly reap the rewards of their hunting success.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we have a subsistence lifestyle in our rural areas, and I think everybody, most people I know of, supports the subsistence priority. Governor Palin has been closely associated with a group called the Alaska Outdoor Council. And they have been pushing, trying to alter the basis for which we manage our wildlife to favor the highest probability of hunter success. And I think to some degree they've been hiding behind the needs of the rural people. And a lot of their agenda is to increase the success for sport hunters. This group has not supported a priority preference be placed for subsistence user. Governor Palin, when she ran for governor, never articulated a clear support for a subsistence priority, but certainly articulated clear support for modification of how we regulate our wildlife so that we can be more aggressive in predator control and aerial wolf hunting, and also aerial wolf hunting of bears as well. She's been a strong advocate of that. What people have to realize is that, you know, the dynamics of wildlife up here, it's not a black and white issue. There are many of us that care about conservation, that care about ecosystem concerns, that also are very much pro-hunting. We just sort of feel that the notion of hunting from the air, you know, defies the realm of fair chase. We feel that ecosystem considerations need to be part of the mix. Managing wildlife for viewing opportunities and for ecosystem integrity needs to be part of the mix and not just be driven purely by what we have to do for the highest probability of hunter success. It's really clearly been her agenda.
It does seem to be a numbers game that what we want are lots and lots and lots of, and I'll put it my own crude way, things to kill. I'm not anti-hunting or anything, but in terms of science, management of wildlife, that seems to be the drive. But there are other purposes and for wildlife. Many other purposes. To what degree have you ever heard we'll call it a more sensitive voicing of her concerns for the importance of wildlife in Alaska? I'll leave it at that.
I have not heard a more sensitive concern.
You say you have not.
No, we have not heard one. You know, and one of the things that we were trying to ask for her is an opportunity to try to educate her about the other aspects, the other economic benefits of wildlife, such as wildlife viewing and those types of things. And we've yet to have an opportunity to educate her on those things. So
it would be very difficult for me to be a hunter for a lot of reasons. And I can say I'm a hypocrite because I eat meat, et cetera, et cetera. However, that being said, when I look at a moose, for example, I don't see it as an object to be killed. I oftentimes am amazed at what the animal is, its own life, and the fact that it's alive, that it raises children and cares for them and defends them, and that there's a much more complex dynamic to these creatures than just to be killed. And I always am hoping that, for example, in someone who has the capacity to make extraordinary decisions, as she will, influencing public lands and in the United States proper, I would really hope that those sorts of values, those sorts of perceptions could be part of the mix. But I'm just afraid that in this particular case, I'm just like you, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just not seeing that sensitivity.
I've not seen it, and I would not expect it in her capacity as vice president.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that concerns me as I listen to Sarah Palin is that it does seem as if politics does trump science. And from my own perspective here, I am so worn out arguing silly arguments when science should be discussed. And to some extent, it feels as if that drives Sarah Palin perhaps more than I'd care for it too. So, for example, can we move up to Anwar for a bit here? Because that certainly is an enormous issue and one in which she is very outspoken. Can you give us a short background on Anwar, sort of where it is, but also now the power that she brings to opening up Anwar for oil and gas exploration?
Right, and we actually refer to it as the Arctic Refuge, and certainly opening up the Arctic Refuge has been an issue that's been around for a long time, and many people have determined that, you know, if we did exploit all the oil in the Arctic Refuge, it would just provide 6 months of the nation's oil needs. So, you know, it needs to sort of be brought into the perspective of the bigger picture of, well, could we maybe achieve that same end by conserving. But coming back to the Arctic Refuge, you need to also realize that, you know, about 80% of Alaskans support opening the Arctic Refuge. And so we can understand Governor Palin. You know, it's hard for a politician in the state to get elected dog catcher if you don't support opening the Arctic Refuge.
Mm-hmm.
What's more disturbing, though, is the context of trying to aggressively open some of the offshore areas.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, heard in the Republican National Convention, you know, everybody chanting, drill baby, drill baby. And, you know, that's just really disconcerting, not just from the environmental standpoint, but from the fact that, you know, it really plays into saying, let's continue our addiction on oil. And, you know, the more we focus on drilling, the more we're choosing energy increase over energy ingenuity. I've seen estimates reported in journals that say, as the United States, you know, our electrical utilities right now only run at about 55% energy efficiency, and that if we just ran our utilities more efficient, there's enough power there to meet the power needs of Japan. You know, we're a very wasteful country when it comes to the use of our energy, and certainly we know we can't get to a new clean energy future and solve all of our energy needs overnight. So we're still going to have some reliance on, you know, our natural gas and our existing oil and gas leases. But we need to look at them as a bridge to the future and not as the solution, because that just drives us back into the old oil addiction. And I have no doubt that Hugo Chavez and people in the oil emirates were excited to hear that, and drill, baby, drill, because it just plays back into their hands.
Mm-hmm.
So we just really need somebody that's going to step back and take the really bigger picture of charting a more secure energy future for us. And in Alaska, we are an energy state, and we think that we have a very important role to play. Our natural gas, you know, emits a lot less carbon than coal-fired power plants, and we think our gas can serve as a bridge to a clean energy future. We have tremendous renewable energy resources up here in Alaska, and we're capable, with proper leadership, of redefining who we are as an energy state. So we want to go forward, not backwards, into the drill baby mode.
I want to move forward into offshore drilling, et cetera, but I also want to revisit one aspect of the Arctic Refuge. One of the things I'm sure you've heard and is now being brought into this particular campaign is that when it comes to drilling in the Arctic Refuge, that what's the big issue? It's really only 2,000 acres. And this is where I have a real problem. We need to bring real science, honesty, and openness to these discussions. And unfortunately, it's tragic that that is such a willfully misleading statement. Because, yes, it is only 2,000 acres, but it's not as if it's in one little footprint in the Arctic Refuge. In reality, it's spread over the vast area, the 2,000 acres, such that there is a huge network of wells and pipelines and roads that interconnect that area, and it's a totally different picture that I think should be presented in terms of what we're really talking about. How does that run by you, and what are your thoughts on that?
No, that's that's an accurate portrayal in the fact that, you know, the entire refuge would be open, but, you know, the footprint that the roads and the pipelines would make is, quote, only 2,000 acres, but it's not contiguous. It is spread out throughout.
If there's a road that's 30 feet wide,
you know,
it can run for 40 miles, and I don't know how, what the acreage is. I haven't done the math, but it's a totally different picture. It becomes a huge network of interconnecting wells.
And it's my understanding, too, that the 2,000 acres currently defined, it doesn't include, you know, the area that would be covered by gravel mines, roads, pipelines, seismic or other exploration operations. It is misleading to portray the image that we just want this little bit of 2,000 acres. You immediately think that it's contiguous and it's just a matter of reaching it from directional drilling, and so
it's that kind of framing that is misleading that I find particularly disgusting. I don't know what else the word is. And dangerous, because I'm afraid that as we start looking at other issues, as particularly if Sarah Palin is going to become the vice president and conceivably the president, that this type of sort of misleading information about why and how things will happen will percolate down into our vast public lands. If McCain, Palin were elected, these issues about our energy independence are going to really demand some hard-edged decision-making as it relates to, let's say, offshore oil drilling, which is certainly an issue in your area. What can you tell us about Governor Palin's approach to protections and or approval of offshore drilling?
Right now, you know, we had the Chukchi Sea opened up. It's a very sensitive offshore area. It's a shallow area where there not only is the polar bear in that region, but you've got the right whale, you've got lots of declining marine mammals. So she's just, you know, pretty much been, you know, a non-abashed supporter of offshore oil and gas drilling.
In your efforts to try to reach her and communicate with her, what is your success?
Well, actually, you know, compared to her predecessor, we've had one meeting with her as a conservation community, and other members of her administration have been accessible to us, where before her predecessor completely shut us out. Have we've had all the access we want to be able to educate her on these issues? No. Has she presented herself, you know, as at least open to us? Yes.
Do you think she listens? So what of America's destiny? Whose hands is it in? We continue our search for answers when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
She's smart, she's perky, she's got a big family, and she may take control of America, which actually means me and you, your friends and family, our army and navy and intelligence networks, our economy and prospects of recovery from our drunken drive into an economic ditch. Under the Bush administration, only 4,000 American men and women died, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis due to rabid bad judgment. Judgment matters, and one can pray that in the years ahead, we never see such blindness. Pray, and then vote using the wisdom and instincts for survival that God hath provided. The Sarah Palin survey continues. Stay tuned. Our conversation with Kate Troll, Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, continues. Do you think she listens?
That's a good question, because sometimes, you know, there's silence on the other end, and it's hard to interpret whether that silence is sincere listening or if it's, okay, thank you, I've listened, but I don't agree with you.
I'm just trying to imagine that if the policies of Governor Palin were to continue in Alaska, what kind of changes might you expect in the future? Because I want the reason I obviously asked that is, what might we expect down in the rest of the states here, following her sort of approach to the environment?
Well, I think that you would see some of the scientific community, their opinions being filtered once again. I mean, we saw that occurring on the science around polar bears. To me, that's disconcerting about that is we saw the previous Bush administration, how they manipulated the science on climate change. And, you know, are we opening ourselves to that type of screening of science to fit what's politically your political agenda of the day? So that's one big red flag that gets raised. And the other thing that I think your listeners need to know about is she's currently made another statement as a vice presidential candidate that she doesn't see their climate change being man-made, that there is not a linkage between climate change and human activity. And this is a time in an era where you've got tremendous scientific consensus. It is probably the most powerful statement of scientific consensus that exists in the world. And if she doesn't get it on that level, then will she really get it on all the other resource science-based questions that get put before her?
That's exactly the problem from my perspective. As far as many people are concerned, it's pretty well settled at this point. And the fact that she's willing to make a statement like that suggests that she's really out of the loop here. She's not in touch with, you know, how the world is beginning to become of one mind and share our knowledge. Yes.
And she's been on record. She, you know, believes in creationism and would like to see that taught in the schools. While she hasn't advanced that agenda as governor yet, you know, we've seen very clearly that's her belief, so she doesn't accept the science of evolution either. So you clearly, on these two issues, you have someone who is out of step with mainstream scientific thinking.
And as well, it is just basically the Bush kind of agenda moved forward again. And perhaps I thought for a while there we were perhaps making some progress in these realms, and to see a real giant backward step to have to fight those wars again is frightening to me.
Yeah, and on these sorts of issues, the only difference between Sarah Palin and George Bush is lipstick.
Okay, there you go. Well said. She's very smart woman, and actually very appealing in some ways. But she also is promoting in Alaska something called the Roads to Resources. That concerns me enormously because, for example, in wilderness areas, et cetera, I'm afraid that she begins to, if she were vice president and or president, that the whole concept of roads to resources is the mindset that she sees all of the public, in essence, public lands as basically resources to be exploited. Am I right or am I wrong about that?
You're generally right about that. She hasn't been as hard as her predecessor in terms of the Roads to Resources campaign. She actually stopped one of his pioneer roads, but in terms of the aspect of you know, these resources are here for us to consume, and we also know that, you know, that, you know, certainly contributes to our economy, so she does sort of have that kind of attitude about the roads to resources. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, in fairness, trying to put her in the context of her predecessor, and right, she's not as hard over as he was.
One of her claims is that she has stood up to the oil companies. And again, this framing issue is the one that most concerns me. I'd love to believe that what we see is what we get. And maybe to some extent that is true. But I do not like people who like to reframe things to make a point but aren't being accurate. One of those is that she stood up to the Bush administration concerning the listing of polar bears, suggesting that the Bush administration was the story that she wants to present is that here was the Bush administration clamoring and pounding on people to make sure that the polar bear was listed as an endangered species, and somehow she stood up to them. And, you know, I don't ever remember hearing George Bush say that was something that was very important or on his agenda. So this concept that she's standing up to the Bush administration, in reality, what she's doing is standing up to certain environmental decisions that finally were made in the Department of Interior to actually follow through with what otherwise had been endangered species legislation. That's disingenuous, isn't it?
It's very disingenuous, yeah, because, I mean, she's standing up to the Bush administration to push the oil and gas agenda when it comes to the polar bear listing.
Right.
And, I mean, Secretary Kempthorne tried to, you know, walk that fine line between recognizing the science that he was getting from the USGS, mm-hmm. and which basically acknowledges that it's the loss of habitat, being sea ice, which will cause this precipitous decline in polar bears. But at the same time, you know, the interactions of the oil and gas industry were sort of de minimis by compared to the effect of climate change. So he tried to issue a ruling that would allow some operations to still go forward, but he really clearly made the case that, you know, climate change is causing the habitat, and that's where I think, you know, Governor Palin kind of got on the wrong side of things, because she doesn't really see the whole connection to human activity and climate change, and, you know, doesn't want to see these listings as a way to address climate change.
One of the areas that, again, concerns me is the fact that she seems to be so willing to promote almost any sort of extractive industry. And I oftentimes think that when we say oil and gas, we kind of, you know, suggested they're the evildoers in some cases, but it's really the extractive industries, mining being one, and that some of her decisions have concerning, for example, gold mines, massive gold mines in Alaska. She doesn't seem to see the correlation between some of the potential very dangerous environmental impacts from gold mining, and I've had to face that face forward when I was in New Mexico. Tell us about how she's kind of softening the rules there.
Well, actually, she didn't soften the rules so much as the fact that her predecessor softened the rules, and she's only sort of reinstated, you know, one of the three dismantlings that he undertook. I think what a lot of people were really concerned about was, you know, she personally came out in support or in opposition of what we call a Clean Water Initiative, which would have put a requirement that large mines, meaning 640 acres or larger, you know, would have to demonstrate that they could, you know, not discharge of any toxic pollutions into salmon streams. So that was real, you know, surprising and I think telling, I should say, of where she leans when she came out in opposition of the Clean Water Initiative. We have asked her administration to close what we call the toxic loophole in the mixing zone legislation. And we currently, her predecessor made a change to the water quality standards that allows you to have mixing zones, and mixing zones are where you can temporarily exceed the water quality standards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we used to have this flat ban on no mixing zones in salmon streams whatsoever. And then they modified it to say, well, wait a minute, only no mixing zones when salmon are present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as if the habitat isn't year-round. And so we've been requesting and trying to get her administration to close that toxic loophole. That hasn't happened. So we weren't getting support there. And then just very recently got Governor Palin came out in opposition of the Clean Water Initiative, which would have focused on that very issue, but for large mines. So she definitely has tilted the fact that she's there to support mining.
You know, I really try to be fair. I try to be objective, and at least that's what I claim about myself. Okay, I don't know that others claim the same thing, but that's what I talk about. That's how I try to imagine myself. But I'm truly trying to get a handle on Sarah Palin, because it does feel to me as if there's some other agenda here. There's some other reason. This was such a dark horse character that came to serve the mission of John McCain to become president. What, from your perspective, is the truth here? Why is she given this opportunity? Why was she brought forward? Is there another agenda that we really need to be aware of?
Well, I mean, I think she was brought forward to enhance John McCain's electability, pure and simple. She really wasn't brought forward because she had a depth of a resume and experience to bring, and that she had a particular vision that we all needed to be enlightened about. As you noticed, you know, she really energized the conservative, the far-right base of the Republican Party that John McCain was having difficulty reaching to. And there also, you know, the issue of women running for high office certainly was out there in this election season, and to try and one up and reestablish his maverick image is why I think we have Sarah Palin. We have her there for image and not for substance.
And I totally agree. All of those are absolutely correct. I guess my concern is that there is something hidden here, which actually is this environmental agenda that needs to really be brought forward. It does seem to me as if in her role as vice president, well, that she can become an extraordinary advocate, perhaps a very effective advocate for all the things that we've been talking about. And that is a huge reason why she was brought in.
There's a reason to why we're having this interview, because I think, you know, particularly on the issues of climate change and energy, it's very foreboding to have someone of her stature be considered as vice president. And, you know, the good thing she does bring to the whole debate is that she makes it a very clear choice. If you are at all concerned about the environment, you now have a really black and white choice. There's no more shades of gray, because, you know, McCain kind of, you know, has done a little bit of things. He did support, you know, some, you know, author some climate change legislation, although he's not pushing it to the degree that we'd like to see him. But, you know, she sort of takes those shades of grays out, and you've got a real clear choice. If you want a pro-environment candidate, it's the Obama-Biden ticket.
I've already endorsed Mr. Obama on the show here, and Biden. I think it's a great opportunity for America to move forward in its on its own right, but as well into the world, and just reestablish some really dangerously broken relationships.
You know, energy is the subtext of a lot of the issues that we face today in our economy. And when you have candidates that have an aggressive agenda toward transitioning us to a clean energy future that get the connection on climate change, you're going to be in a better position to renew and restore our economy. So, you know, I easily make that link. You know, if you are going to want to support, you know, a pro-environment, pro-economy agenda, and in my mind, those two things always sort of go hand in hand. In particular, we know that up here in Alaska, since a lot of our resource economy is resource driven. So I take a perspective of, you know, who's really going to be good for the environment tends to be, if they have the right vision, the one that's also going to be the best candidate for the economy.
Couldn't agree with you more. We can literally change this country, create millions of jobs, revitalize myriads of technologies, interlocking and with the right leadership and vision, using the old bully pulpit to unite all of this effort, we could get this job done. I do believe we could become essentially energy independent in 10 years.
We should be leaders in the energy revolution.
Well, we certainly should, because you know why? Because otherwise everyone else is going to surpass us just from the perspective of technology. That scares me. It concerns me. Why we're put in this position over silly issues, particularly as it relates to serving perhaps the extractive industries, I'll call it. We're shooting ourselves in the head on that one. you're absolutely right. That is my concern. You know, and one of the challenges for we who refer to ourselves as environmentalists is the fact that I just heard actually Newt Gingrich this morning speaking to a group in St. Paul. I didn't know this, but he was the guy who came up with the phrase drill, 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 that vision. And I've commented any number of times in the last number of shows here how I've been appalled at how in essence, the environmental community has been co-opted by this mantra because it relates to energy independence. One of my big issues about the drill, drill, drill campaign, a lot of people are just responding to it in a positive way, which is frightening. And that is the fact that it doesn't seem as if our side, quote unquote, is making the message loudly and clearly enough that what they're really saying is, and they do say it on occasion, drill anywhere. And I think that's an important thing to really bring to the table because it's been kind of cloaked in the idea that it's about offshore drilling, but that's only part of the story. And it really is about drilling everywhere or anywhere. And certainly in areas of the West, or if you look into Kentucky and Tennessee where we're removing whole mountaintops to get to coal, this vision becomes pretty devastating. So I'm just curious what your thoughts may be about the balance between this concept of drill, drill, drill offshore versus everybody's backyard.
I agree with you in that the way they're presenting it is that every fossil fuel resource in your backyard is now going to be looked at as accessible. You know, it's we have to achieve energy independence at any and all risk. And there is a misperception that it's just readily available, you know. I mean, there's a whole exploration, development. I mean, it's not like if we've aggressively started, drilling all the leases that the oil companies currently have, it's still not going to address our price of gasoline till 10, 20 years away. So there's this total misperception that drilling is going to solve the price at the gas pump. It's not at all.
It's a total misapplication of reality.
And I want to come back to the fact that it also overlooks the fact that the cheapest megawatt is a negawatt, if you will, and that's a negawatt is the watt of energy you don't have to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have, our electrical utilities running at 55% efficiency, there is the low-hanging fruit. Raising the standards for higher fuel efficiency is one way of making your dollars for gas go further. There are just so many more practical solutions. Up here in the state of Alaska, for example, one of the bridges, which Governor Palin still supports, is the bridge across the Kinnick Arm, as a way to access Wasilla, her hometown. Well, a commuter rail makes a whole lot more sense from the big energy picture.
Is this breaking news?
There's two bridges to nowhere.
Well, okay. Let's be specific because I hadn't heard this story.
Okay, well, here's the deal in that there were two bridges to nowhere. One was the one in Ketchikan, which, by the way, she supported when she ran for governor.
Yeah, that's on that 2006 debate, yes.
Right. And then the second one is the Kinnick Arm Bridge that leaves Anchorage and accesses undeveloped wetlands near her hometown of Wasilla. That project has not been canceled, and she still has $100 million federal dollars of the formerly earmarked dollars are still dedicated to the proposed Kinnick Arm Bridge.
How do you spell that, by the way?
Kinnick, K-N-I-K, Arm.
Kinnick
Arm Bridge.
Okay. Haven't heard a word about that.
Yeah.
Well, right. this is a first time.
It opens up land for development across the inlet from Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would make it a slightly shorter drive from Wasilla to Anchorage.
We're talking with Kate Troll, who's the executive director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, and thank you so much. Bottom line for me is the fact that we have an opportunity here to move forward right
and
now.
Not backwards.
That's exactly correct. In every sense of the word, in terms of our vision, in terms of our commitment, in terms of our coming together, in terms of technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It feels to me as if the Palin presence on the ticket here would be a giant step backwards. it would be stupid for us to have to fight these wars again. That's my take. What is yours?
Oh, I agree that it's a step backwards. I mean, we really need to elect people that have a comprehensive view of the energy revolution. And also, in today's world, we have to think about sustainability of our resources and not just be on the resource extraction train wagon. You know, it doesn't mean we can't have resource-based industries, but it needs to be balanced out. We need to be on target for leading the way for a sustainable Earth and not moving backwards from that. And the Obama-Biden ticket is the ticket that takes us forward, and the McCain-Palin ticket now presents a stark contrast for voters.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that encourages me is that these new technologies can be ramped up so quickly and result in energy and other technologies very quickly put people back to work.
I've seen studies that show that on a per-dollar basis, for, you know, every dollar you spend on renewable energy, it creates three times more the number of jobs that it would create in the oil and gas industry.
We're talking with Kate Troll. I want to thank you so much. If a person were to frame this argument, is there an easy way to frame this such that it can penetrate more efficiently into the American mindset right now?
Yep, and that's what I said earlier. The only difference between Sarah Palin and George Bush on these issues is lipstick.
Kate Troll, Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, a perfect way to end this conversation. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
As it turns out, there are lots of people who know Sarah Palin. And we will continue our quest into who she is and what could be the consequences of a potential Palin presidency. We are at a point in America and the world where we either unite to create an intelligent design for our future, or we may pay the ultimate price of our ignorance. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Tuesday, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth rings out around the world, here on the Wild Side News.
He talked to his team of huskies as he mushed them through the snow, with the northern lights a-running wild in the land of the midnight sun. Yes, Sam McCord was a mighty man in the U.S.